We're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph, three lines down. The Gemara is continuing here with the Agadata with regards to the fetus in the womb. Yesterday, we had a description of how the fetus is placed in the womb. Over here, Rabbi Lazar has another description about some of the features of the fetus, which is Amar Rabbi Lazar, Lamalavat Domeh, Bimei Imo. What is a fetus like inside of the womb? It goes Munach B'Seifel Shomayim. It's like a nut that is placed in a bowl of water. Adam Notenetz Bo'alav Shokea Lekan Ulekan. No matter which side that you place your finger on the nut, it slides to the other side. So too, the fetus in the womb, whichever side you go to touch it from, it shifts around, it moves, and that is a phenomenon that we are familiar with. Tan Rabbanan, Shlosha Chodoshim Arishonim, Vlad Dar B'Madora Tachton. For the first 3 months, the fetus is found in the lower part of the womb. Emtzayim, in the middle trimester, Dar B'Madora Emtzayi. It lives in the middle section of the womb. Achronim, the last trimester, Vladar b'madora elyon. The fetus is in the upper area of the womb. B'kevin she'igia zmano letzeit. The time comes for the baby to exit. Mit hapeich v'yotzei. It flips over and then exits, which is, we know, does happen with the fetus inside, that the fetus eventually has to turn around in order to come out head first in the birthing process. If it doesn't, it can be very dangerous, and they tried to fix that so that the baby is not born in the breech. V'zehu chavle isha, and that's what caused the pangs of labor for the woman. Ra'inu d'tanya, and that's what we have in the braita. Chavle shel nekeva merubim mishel zachar. The pangs of birth of a female are greater than that of a male, because the Gemara believes over here that a male or female, when they are born in different ways. Both are born head first, exiting, but when a male is born, it's born with its head facing down towards the ground. And when a female is born, she's born with the head facing upward towards the sky. And therefore, they believe, since while the fetus was inside the womb, it was face down in the womb, therefore the zachar that is exiting face down, all it has to do is rotate the body in order to come out, because it will remain face down. As opposed to that, the female will not only have to rotate, but will also have to flip over in order to exit the woman. And because of that, the birth of a female is much more painful than the birth of a male, according to the Gemara. Vamar Rabbi Lazar, Mikra, what's the pasuk? Here they're bringing a pasuk to prove the fact that the baby is found in different locations within the womb. Asher useti vaseter, that you created me, made me in hiding meaning inside the womb. Rukamti bitachtiot aretz. You curiously wrought me, made me at the depths of the land. So over here they're making a play on, well, where's the hidden location where you were formed is inside the womb, and there you were in Tachtiot Aretz, that you were in the lower part. Darti lo ne'amar. It doesn't say that I lived there, it doesn't say that the baby remains in that location, but rather Rukamti, that I was formed, I was put together, woven together. That happens in Tachtiot Aretz, that happens in the lower part of the womb, because that's the beginning of the creation of the fetus from conception through the first trimester. And therefore, the term Rukamti is used with Tachtiot Aretz. But later on, the baby moves out of that area to higher areas of the womb. Maishnoa chevle nekeva merubim mishel zachar. This is what we spoke about before. Why is it that the pangs of birthing for a female are much greater than for a male? Ze bat kederach tashmisho, veze bat derach tashmisho. So they both come out the way that they cohabitate. Since the man cohabitates facing downwards towards the ground, therefore he comes out face down. The female who cohabitates with the face towards the sky, heavenward, therefore she also comes out with her head facing upwards. Zu ofech pana, v'ze ein ofech pana. And as we discussed before, that not only does the baby have to rotate to move the head down towards the lower part of the woman to exit head first, but there the female also must flip over in order to have this happen. Whereas, when it comes to a male, he doesn't have to do that flipping over. Tan Rabbanan, Shlosha Chodoshim Arishonim, Tashmish Kasheh Leisha, V'gam Kasheh LeVlad. During the first 3 months, cohabitation between the husband and wife is detrimental both to the woman and to the fetus. Emtzayim, in the middle trimester, Kasheh Leisha, it's detrimental to the woman, V'yafeh LeVlad, but it's beneficial to the fetus. Acharonim, the last trimester, Yafeh Leisha, V'yafeh LeVlad, is beneficial both to the woman and to the fetus. As far as what the problem is, Rashi says that the problem the first trimester is that the vlad is in the lower part of the womb, and therefore it'll be impacted by the tashmish. But he doesn't know what he says. Kasheli shalu yadan lamai. Says, I don't know what the detriment is to the woman, because I can explain to you what the detriment is to the fetus. As the fetus moves further up, it's less problematic, the tashmish. But as far as the woman is concerned, he's not certain as to why there's a problem here in terms of tashmish. So why is it in the last trimester that tashmish cohabitating is good for the fetus? Shemitochach nimtza vlad miluban umizuraz. Because that will have the fetus be, miluban will be whitened, but here it means well-formed. And mizuraz, which means vitality, but here it means the strength and strong vitality for the baby. So it's beneficial for the fetus. Tana, hamishamesh mitzato liyom tishim kilu shofech damim. Within the first 90 days, if one cohabitates with his wife, when she, from the time of conception until the first trimester is over, that is like killing the baby. How does he know? Within the first 90 days, you can't know whether the woman's pregnant. You only know after the first trimester that she's pregnant. So how does the husband know not to cohabitate with his wife in order to prevent this from happening? Person can cohabitate with his wife without thinking about this, without considering this, because vishomer pitayim Hashem. Hashem watches over the foolish. So this principle has been applied in halacha in many places, which is shomer pitayim Hashem. Hashem watches over the foolish. How do we deal with this principle of shomer pitayim Hashem, that you can do things that are dangerous, things that might cause damage, and yet we say that Hashem will watch out. We do what we're supposed to do, and Hashem takes care of the situation. How do we reconcile that with the requirement of ushmartem et nafshotechem, that one must take care of themselves? There's an obligation in the Torah not to hurt oneself or not to do things that are dangerous that could cause damage or injury to the individual. So the balance that is struck in the poskim and in many of the tshuvot is that we have to distinguish between, number one, we only say Shomer Pitayim Hashem when it's a normal course. It's what people do on a regular basis. It's not something unusual. It's not something extreme. It has to be the normal course. That's number one. Number two is that even if it's in the normal course, it has to be something that is out of your control. It can't be something that you have influence over or something that you can control in the situation. If you have control over it, then we have a demand of shmartem et nafshotechem, as well as if it's something extreme or unusual where it's not a normal danger that people incur on a regular basis. Also over there, we say ushmartem lenafshotechem, that you must watch out, you must take care of yourself, prevent yourself from injury or harm. So a couple of just quick examples for that. For instance, driving a car. Even though we know that driving a car does entail danger, and chas v'shalom, we know that there are fatalities, injuries that come about from driving in a car. Nevertheless, with regards to driving a car, we will say shomer pitayim Hashem. That's the normal way in which people commute, that people get about. And therefore, if one goes into a car, they're not assuming undue danger by driving. On the other hand, if one drives like a lunatic, or if one drives without a seatbelt on, in both of those cases, a person is probably or likely in violation of a mitzvah mitorah. It's a doraita. Ushmartem et nafshotechem. Over there, number one, it should not be the normal course and the normal way that people do. But even if it was the normal course, it's something that's within your control. And since it's within your control, number one, to drive properly and not like a lunatic. And number two is to put on a seatbelt. Some of that where statistically the evidence and the empirical data is overwhelming, that if a person does not put on a seatbelt when they get into the car, they're most likely in violation of a mitzvah min haTorah, in violation of mitzvah deoraita. The same is true when it comes to riding a bicycle. People ride bicycles in order to get from point A to point B, to commute, to move about. Even though there are dangers associated with riding a bike, nevertheless, since it's the normal course, a person can ride a bicycle. On the other hand, to get onto a bicycle without a helmet would be a violation of the mitzvah min haTorah, deoraita. You don't say over there, shomer pitayim Hashem. To ride the bike is shomer pitayim Hashem. To ride without a helmet, that's something, number one, that's within your control. Number two is that there is overwhelming evidence to the fact that people who ride without helmets are much more susceptible to injury, danger, and permanent damage. And therefore, a person who does not wear the helmet is most likely in violation of the din d'oraita and is not covered by shomer pitayim Hashem. So they're just two quick examples that have halachic ramifications of when do we apply shomer pitayim Hashem versus When do we say that there's an obligation on the individual to prevent themselves from harm or injury? Tan Rabbanan, Shlosha Shutafim Yesh Ba'adam. There are three partners with a human being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, Aviv V'imo, and the parents. Aviv Mazriya Lovin. The father provides the semen, but that means the white within the child. Shmimeno, from that comes the atzamot, the bones, Vigidim, and the sinews, Vitzipornaim, the nails, the moach, the brain mass, Shibrosho, Velovin Shibayin, and the white of the eye. So what is the white parts of the construction of the being? The Gemara here assumes because the semen is white, so that is the contributing factor to the developmental parts, the development of the human being in these areas that are white. Imo mazret odem. The woman whose discharges are red, and therefore the Gemara assumes here that her contribution in terms of ovulation is on the red side or colored. So the mimeno, from there you get the or, ubasar, you get the flesh, the skin, usearo, the hairs, vishachor shebaayin, and the black and the pupil of the eye. Va'akorish baruch hu notein ba ruach unishama. God places into him the life force, nishama, that which is from above, uklaster panim, and the shape of his face, viriat ayin, the ability to see, ushmiat ozen, the ability to hear, Dibur Peh, the ability to speak, Vihiloch Raglayim, and the ability to be mobile, Ubina Vehaskel, and there are others that have Vedat Ubina Haskel, the ability to think, to comprehend, and to be creative. The Kevin Shigiyaz Manoli Pater Min Olam, and when it reaches the time period where a person is supposed to leave the world, the Kosh Baruch Hu Notel Chelko, God pulls the plug on his part, so he takes out the Nishama, the Ruach, and with that goes all of the vital organs that shut down. And the parts that belong to the father and mother, he leaves with them. When it comes to the preservation of meat, if you put salt on the meat, it'll be preserved, and then you'll have it for a long time. Meat without salt, you may as well throw the meat to the dogs, because it's going to go bad very soon. So that's the same thing over here. The physical body of the human being is nothing without the nishama. So too, the meat is nothing without the salt. So the Gemara here is drawing the parallel between the salt and the nishama that provide the duration of the meat as well as the duration of the human being or the value of the human being. The salt does that for meat, and the nishama and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's contribution does that for the human being. Now, you should know that the modern poskim already discussed this and dismissed it entirely, but there was a period in time when it came to determining paternity that they were doing blood tests, and there were those that did not want to accept the results of blood tests for paternity, because over here we see that the father does not contribute to the blood. The blood comes from the mother. That which is red, that which is colored, comes from the mother's side, and therefore the blood tests or the ability to see paternity through the blood was considered to be halachically incorrect because of this. Many of the modern day poskim already discussed this and say that that's not an issue at all. And of course, if you can determine paternity through a blood test, we do think that that's efficacious, assuming that the test is a valid test. Darish Rav Chinina Bar Papa, my dichtiv, what does it mean in the pasuk? Osig dolot anin cheker, vinithloot anin mispar. So the Hashem does these greatnesses and these wonders without any end. Bo reish lo kemidat ha-kodesh baruch hu miyudat basar v'adam. That God is not like a human being. Midat basar v'adam notein chifetz bechemet. Person takes an object and places it into a flask. Torah. And then ties up the opening of the flask. Lamalo. And he keeps it on top. Safek mishtemer, safek en mishtemer. And still, even under those conditions, we're not certain that whatever's inside will be protected and will remain preserved. Via Kodesh Baruch Hu Tzaru Bar B'Meisha, he makes or creates the fetus within the womb of the woman. Pitucha, and it's open. And not only is it open, Upi Alamata, and that opening is downwards towards the ground. Umishtamer, and the fetus stays in there. So that's the Gadlut of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Dvar Acher, Adan Notein Chafatzav, the Kof Maznaim, person places his objects on a scale. Kozman Shimechbid, Yered Damata. The more objects you put on the scale, the more the scale comes down. V'alo Kodesh Baruch Hu is just the opposite. Kozman Shimechbid, Havlad Oleh Damalo. That the heavier and the bigger the fetus gets, it moves higher up. And that's what we saw before, that in the beginning stages of the development of the fetus, it's found in the Mador HaTachton, and then it's found in the Mador HaEmtzai, and then it's in Mador HaElyon. So as it's getting bigger, it's moving actually upward instead of downward. Dorosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili, my dichtiv. What is meant by this pasuk? Odecha Al kinara ot niflete. I give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you have wonderfully and fearfully made me. Niflaim ma'asecha. Your works are marvelous. V'nafshi yodat me'od. And my nefesh, my soul, knows this well. Borei shalok midat HaKadosh Baruch Hu midat basar v'dam. Again, God is not like man. Midat basar v'dam. When it comes to man, Adam notein zaronim be'aruga. Person puts seeds into a garden or into a patch. Whatever seed you put down, that's what's going to grow there. Even if you mix multiple seeds together, what's going to come up is going to be each one individually. Even though when it comes to the conception of a baby, that the contribution is both from the husband, from the man, and the woman, and the wife, and together they have their zera joined together, and it forms a single combined unit between them. So that doesn't happen. When human beings plant seeds, each seed remains independent of the other seed. They don't combine to make a single entity between them. Yet, when it comes to the conception of a child, the two seeds are brought together and they produce a single entity, not two separate entities. Devar acher. Soveya notein tzmanim liyoreh. Person who is a dyer puts in the dyes into the cauldron. Kulan olim letzeva echad. When they're all mixed together, then one color comes out. As all the colors mix, they become a single color, whatever that color is. But he can't keep the colors independent. And despite the fact that it's a single entity within the womb, there's distinct colors. And everything retains its unique color. And it doesn't have this combination where everything is a single color. Darash of Yosef, what is meant by the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Odacha Hashem? I should give praise to you, Hashem. Pianaftabi, you were angry with me. Yashov abuchau tenachameni. But now your anger has receded, and you are comforting me. I mean that Hashem was at one point angry, and now with the receding of that anger, and that comfort that comes, I should give praise to you, Hashem. But me'akatub midaber. What is this pasuk speaking about? V'shnei be'adam she'atzu l'schora. Two people went out to commerce, to do business. Yashov lo kotz le'chad. One of them stepped on something, got a splinter in his foot, got a thorn in his foot, and he couldn't go on. He was cursing, and he was out of his mind that now he's missing out on this great opportunity to go to business. The Amim Shama, the other guy who wasn't stopped by this injury, went out and he continued on, and he went to this commercial opportunity. Shama, and he hears, he gets the word, that the boat that he was supposed to be on with his friend to go and take advantage of this commercial opportunity sunk, and his friend is no longer. Now he turns around and he starts to thank Hashem for what happened. Sometimes that when something happens to us, when God's angry at us, that we deserve something bad to happen to us. But even though it was something bad, it turns out to be something good. And only in retrospect do we understand or can we comprehend that it was good. So say they over here, that's where we're saying, Odecha Hashem, you were angry at me. And when you were angry at me, I was upset that you got angry at me and something bad happened to me. But Yeshuv HaBecha, but when the anger recedes and I realize that that which happened to me was only for my benefit, then Odecha Hashem, then I can really give you praise Hashem. Because now I understand with hindsight, with perspective, with the greatness of what that which has happened to me. And that's portrayed by this little story about the individual. V'ayinu damar Rabbi Elazar. And that's similar to what Rabbi Elazar says. What is it meant in the pasuk in Tehillim? Oseh nifloot levado. Hashem does these tremendous wonders. Uvaruch shem kivodo leolam. And therefore you have to give blessing to Hashem. His name should be blessed forever. Afilu balanes enu makir beniso. That even though Hashem does oseh nifloot levado, he's alone. He's alone in knowing this. We have to give the praise to Hashem. Because many times when miracles happen to us, we don't even know the miracle happened. Hashem is protecting us, taking care of us. And we aren't even aware of the dangers that were prevented or the bad that could have happened. And we cannot anticipate everything yet. Hashem has protected us, and therefore we need to give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Two things. Because it's Minyan of the Yom, I just heard this past Shabbat, an amazing story that I heard in the name of Rav Zuberstein, that during World War II, there were many Germans who had escaped from Germany and gone to the United Kingdom, to England at the time. England, of course, was going to war with Germany, and they were not comfortable with having German citizens with them in England. They thought that they might be spies, and they were very suspicious of them. So they decided to send these Jews that had come, these refugees, and ship them off to Australia. So they shipped them off in a boat to Australia. These are people who had just escaped with barely anything. Now they have their last belongings and last things that they have. They pack them up onto this boat and they send them out to Australia. And in command of the ship are a bunch of criminals. They sent them with a bunch of criminals to sail them off to Australia. On the trip, it was a very harrowing trip. And the criminals themselves mistreated those Jews that were on board the boat. And over the time period on the boat, they steal all of their possessions. And anything they didn't want, they threw overboard. So these poor Jews had escaped with barely anything. And come to England now, their last possessions, their last valuables were now being thrown overboard by these criminals. They docked in Australia. They dropped these Jews off. Many of them, unfortunately, and for understandable reasons, no longer remained religious because of the harrowing experiences that they'd gone through. They couldn't believe their fate and how much bad could happen to them. 40 years later, from the Nazi Chronicles, it came out the story of this boat. A German ship was sent to sink the boat. It was an English boat. The Germans and the English were at war, and a German boat was sent out to sink the ship. As they were approaching the ship, they saw possessions, valuables floating on the surface of the sea. They picked up some of the items, and they saw that there were letters that were written in German, and that they were valuables that belonged to German citizens. They communicated back to their commanders, and there was a command given by the Führer, by Hitler himself, that if there are German citizens aboard the ship, that they should not sink the ship, but rather they should escort it to its proper port. After the German citizens have disembarked, they could sink the ship. And such it was. They escorted the ship into the port, unbeknownst to the people on the boat. And after the people on board disembarked, the ship sails back with the criminals, and the Germans sink the ship. So those people on board had no idea what was happening to them. They had no idea why their possessions, their last valuables, are being thrown overboard. And they thought the worst many of them could even imagine, being in touch with HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore, thanking Hashem. 40 years later, it's uncovered that that which happened to them saved their lives. And that the fact that their possessions were thrown overboard is what enabled them to live and to survive. And that's what we say here, that even the Bala Nes doesn't know about his Nes. Or, Odech Hashem, I have to give praise to you, Hashem, because even when you are angry at me, it's Latovati. It's going to be for my good in the end. My brother-in-law told me over also a story from Rav Yitzhak Miponovich. I'm only saying it over because it's Minyana Diyoma. It's Rosh Chodesh today, and we said in Hallel today. It says, Hallelu et Hashem kol goyim, shabchuhu kol ha'umim. All the nations of the world should give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why should they give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Next pasuk says, Ki gavar aleinu chasdo. Because Hashem is kind to us and generous to us. That makes no sense. Why is it that the nations of the world are going to give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the chesed that he does to us? So Rav Yitzhak Miponovich explains that that's exactly what is mentioned here in our Gemara, that the Bala Nes doesn't know about the Nes. Only the Goyim know of their plans. They're the only ones who know how much evil that they want to do to us, and how much damage they want to do to us. We, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saves us. He does chesed to us, and he saves us from their evil plans. It's unbeknownst to us. So the only ones who can truly praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'atid lavo is the goyim and the umim. Those that had planned the evil, those that had planned the bad, and their plans were thwarted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we're not even aware of it. Which is, ma'aseh nisim b'chol yom, those who live in Eretz Yisrael know this, that Hashem prevents daily what could be unbelievable tragedies in Eretz Yisrael from terrorists and from people who want to kill us, and we're not even aware of it. And that's why only the goyim, only the umim can give praise to Hashem for the chesed Hashem does to us. And the same concept over here, Minyana Diyoma, because of Rosh Chodesh, that chesed, the tremendous chesed that Hashem does, that even Bala Nes, even the person who the miracle happens to, sometimes isn't aware of the Nes that Hashem is performing for them. Darish Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, my dichtiv, what is meant in the Pasuk? Orchi virivi zerita, that my goings, my walking, my orech, the derech that I go, virivi, and my lying down, zerita, you measured, v'chol derachai, and all of my ways, hiskanto, you are acquainted with. In the pasuk it's written hiskanto with a hey at the end, that you are acquainted with, probably from the word sochein, to nurse, or to be familiar with. Melamed shelo notzar adam min kol atipa ele min habarur sheba. that a person is not created from any one of the drops or the semen that could fertilize the egg, but rather Misha Barur Shaba, the best of them. Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmo, Mashal the Adam, Shirzore Bebeit Agranot. It's like a Mashal, a parable to someone who is winnowing in the threshing area. Notela to Ochel, Umeniach et Fasolet. He takes that which is good, and he leaves behind that which is bad. So to Avir, Hashem picks the best to fertilize, and not the worst. Kidi Rabbi Abau, this is similar to a drasha that Rabbi Abau says, the Rabbi Rami Ktiv, it says in the Pasuk in Shmuel Bet, Vatazreini Chayo. Uchtiv, in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Hakel Hazreini Chayo. So those of you that are familiar with this, the Tehillim Yudchet and the Perech of Bet and Shmuel Bet are almost identical prakim. They are both Shirat David. Shirat David that we read as the Haftorah for the Shira when we read it on Shvi Shel Pesach. This is the Shira that we read as the Haftorah. The Haftorah we read from Shmuel Bet. But there's an identical Perek Yudchet and Tehillim that's almost identical, you might know, of one of the differences between those Prakim. And that is in the last Pasuk in both of these Prakim, it begins Magdil Yeshuot or Migdol Yeshuot. The difference that we have in benching is because the pasuk quoted in Tehillim is Magdil, and the pasuk that's quoted in Shmuel Bet is Migdol. That's one of the differences. Here, the Gemara quotes another difference between them. In Shmuel Bet, it says V'tazreini Chayo. It's spelled with Zayin Resh Hey as the Shoresh, which is that you have winnowed my strength. Whereas in Tehillim, it says Hamazreini Chayo, which is the Aleph becomes a part of the Shoresh, which is Ezor. Azor Matnayim, which is to gird the loins, so that Akela Mazreni Chayel has girded me with strength. Samar David, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shalom, Ziritani, Vizeirastani. You have winnowed me and girded me. Meaning that Hashem has chosen from the choicest, that we said before, of that which could fertilize. And then, Vizazreni, and then you girded me with strength. And you also infused in me and brought me up with strength. So Hashem contributes in both of those ways. Darish Rabbi Abahu, Rabbi was Doresh, my dichtiv, what is meant by the Pasuk, by Bilam, Mi mana afar Yaakov, umispar et rova Yisrael. Who can count the dust of Yaakov, umispar, and can count the number of rova Yisrael? So Gemara says, Malameid, Shekosh Baruch Hu Yoshev, visofer et riviotehem shel Yisrael. Hashem sits there and counts the multitudes of Klal Yisrael. Matai tavo tipa, shad tzadik notzari menu. When will that drop come that the tzaddik will be created from? As Rashi interprets over here, that the Rivi'ah comes from Roveya Onat Tashmishan, comes from the Onah or Roveya, like a archer, an archer in Rashi many places in Shas as well as in Tanakh, interprets that to mean, have allegorical meaning in terms of cohabitation. So Tovia Rivi'otehem means when they cohabitate, Hashem is waiting for that moment of Rivi'ah, that where he can forget the tipa, that drop which the tzaddik will be created from. And so too before, when we said orchi v'riv'i, the word riv'i, and the word orchi, orach, as orach means really the ways, or the derech, and we know that a euphemism for cohabitation is derech eretz, and therefore also over there, orchi v'riv'i, Rashi over there interprets both of those words to have connotations that relate to cohabitation. And that's why the Gemara of their darshins that the fetus is created from the best of the tipot. And over this issue, Bilam lost one of his eyes. Amar mishu tahor v'kadosh u'mishartav teorim u'kidoshim. The one who is tahor, min HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and his servants are teorim and holy. Yatzitz v'davar zeh. He should be able to look at this. This rasha, this Bilam Rasha should be seeing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved with. Miyad nismeteino. Right away, one of his eyes was blinded. Ichtiv, numa gever, shitum ha'ayin. So now this is problematic, because the word that is used in the pasuk there is numa gever, shitum ha'ayin. It's not satum ha'ayin. Here it seems that the Gemara is darshaning satum, the swapping of the sin with the samach, and never satum means to be closed up, and he lost one of his eyes. Both Tosafot on the previous Amud, as well as Rashi and Chumash, points out that that's incorrect. Shittum actually means open and not closed. And therefore, Rashi interprets in Chumash that Shittum Ayin means that his eye socket was empty. He was lacking one eye. So over here, it doesn't mean Nistamete no, that he was blinded. You could say that he was missing his eyeball, but that means open. Rashi gives the possibility of interpretation, which Tosafot also brings over here, which is shtum ayin, means one eye open. Not open like we just interpreted now that his eyesight was empty, but open that he had vision in one eye. And from the fact that it says shtum ayin and not shtum einayin, it says that one eye had visibility. And before it says ugloy einayim, that before he had open eyes in the plural, and now it only says he has one open eye, that's an indication that the other eye was no longer had vision in it. And therefore, that's how Rashi learned what Chazal say here in the Gemara from shtum ayin, which means to be open. When it comes to Yaakov, when he slept with Leah, and from that came Issachar, that Hashem helped out with the conception of Issachar. Shenemar, Issachar chamor gorim. Issachar is like a burdened beast, like the donkey that carries. Chamor garam lo. So the Chazal, the interpret means the chamor, the donkey, garam lo Issachar, caused Issachar to come about. Now Rashi over here says, Chamar Gamaram Lo, he tells the story, Kujabi Chosia, Shinata Chamarosh Yaakov Lo Leah, that the donkey that Yaakov was riding turned and went to Leah's tent. And that wasn't a night that belonged to Leah, but yet the donkey steered in that direction. The problem with that interpretation is that the Pasuk tells us that Leah went out to Yaakov to tell him that she had purchased that night from her sister with the dudaim of her son. So if that's the case, it wasn't the chamor, Leah was the one who had Yaakov come in. And therefore, if you look in the Reb Kiv Eger and the Gilin Yashas, he brings a different interpretation, which is, Baruch Erech Chamra Ktav, Klomar Shkazar Yaakov in a Sadeh. When Yaakov was coming back from the Sadeh, Nahaka Chamor, the donkey brayed, Vishama Leah, and Leah heard the donkey braying, Viatzali Krato, and she goes out to greet him, to tell him that he's coming to her that night. So that's how Hashem helped out in the night, because had Leah not known that Yaakov had come back, he would have gone to wherever he was supposed to go that night. So the donkey brayed to alert Leah to the fact that Yaakov was back, and therefore Leah went out to greet Yaakov and tell him to come that night to her, from which was born Issachar. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Ami, or Rabbi Asi, Isha, Mazret, Tchila, Yoledet Zachar. This we already saw twice before in the Gemara. If the woman is Mazrat v'chilah, that she ovulates first, then Zachar, you have a male. Ish Mazriat v'chilah, if the man seeds first, Yoledet Nekeva, then a female is born. Shneamar, Isha ki tazria, if the woman seeds, then v'yalda Zachar, she will have a male. Tan Rabbanan, this we mentioned before when we saw this the first time, that v'rishona yomrim, Isha Mazriat v'chilah, Yoledet Zachar. Ish Mazriat v'chilah, Yoledet Nekeva. V'lo pirshua chachamiyat adavar, and the Chachamim couldn't explain this, Ad Shabar Rabbi Tzadok Uper Shov. They couldn't explain this, meaning that they didn't know where the source was for this. And along comes Rabbi Tzadok and explains it, and says, by Yaakov, Eile, Bnei, Leah, Asher Yelda, Leyakov, Ipadan Aram. These are the children, Bnei, the male children of Leah, that were born to Yaakov. Ved Dina Bito, and his daughter, Dina. So what do you see from here? Talah Zacharim Bnei Kevot. The Bnei, the sons, were connected to Leah. Bnei Leah. Vinekevot, and Dinah is called Bito, the daughter of Yaakov. So it ascribes the sons to Leah, and it ascribes the daughter to Yaakov. So the Gemara says, that's the source for this fact, that if the Isha is Mizriya Tchila, she's the source for the sons, for the Zacharim, and if the husband or the male is Zareya Tchila, then the product is the daughter, which will be determined by him. And Gemara says, "Vayu bnei ulam anashim giborei chayo dorchei keshet umarbim banim ubnei banim." This is at the end of the Shoshelet of Binyamin and Divrei Yamim. This is the descendants of Shaul HaMelech. And over there it says, "This descendant bnei ulam, they were anashim giborei chayo. They were great people, warriors, dorchei keshet, archers." Umar bim banim ubnei banim, and they had many children and grandchildren. So Gemara says, v'chi biyado shel adam larbot banim ubnei banim. Why are they giving credit to them that the fact that they had a lot of children and a lot of grandchildren? Alright, it's one thing we're talking about. They were gibor echayo, they were dorche keshet. These were crafts or skills that they learned. But banim ubnei banim, what does it have to do with them? It's up to Akash Baruch Hu whether you have a lot of sons and grandsons. Se ala mitoch shemishain atzman bebeten. Because they hold themselves back inside of the woman so that they are not Zoreya Tchila, Kidei Shiazriu Nishotayim Tchila, so that their wives will be Zoreya first, Shubnehem Zicharim, that their children will be males, Male Aleim HaKatuv Kelehem, Marbim Banim Ubnei Banim. The Torah ascribes to them the credit for the fact that they had sons and grandsons. That I could make all of my children males. Again, because of this fact that he knew this secret of Chazal. Rava says, a person who wants to ensure that all his children will be males should cohabitate with his wife. And then again, because Rashi explains here that from the pleasure or the benefit of the first bi'ah, the woman will be mazrat. And then in the second bi'ah, the husband will be mazria. And in that instance, the woman would have been before the husband. And that will cause them to have banim zecharim. Rama Rabbi Yitzchak, Rama Rabbi Ami, or Rabbi Asi. A woman who only becomes impregnate, only conceives close to her vest at the time that she's going to become a nida. Shneamar hein ba'avon cholauti, which the literal meaning of the pasuk means that with sin you shaped me. So over here, avon is the play on nida, karov the nida, at a point in time where it's close to the time where a husband may no longer be with his wife. Then cholauti, you shaped me, so that the product or the fetus was conceived close to the time of ba'avon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Samuch L'Tvila, that actually the baby is conceived close to the time that the woman goes to the mikveh. Now obviously we know that is true today based on the way that we keep Hilchot Nida. Min HaTorah in Hilchot Nida, if the woman goes to the mikveh after 7 days, that would not be true. It's only us that we wait 5 days of Tumah and then Shiva Nikiyim, that it comes out that the woman who turns from the mikveh turns out to be around the time of the conception. And we'll see later on in the Masechta that by the time of Rabbi Yochanan, the way that we keep Nida today was already somewhat in practice. Shnei Amar, and as you know this from, it says, Uvechete yechamatni imi. You have conceived me. Now over there, again, it means in iniquity or sin, but the Gemara is going to make a play on the words, because the word chet can have two meanings. Chet can mean sin or iniquity, but chet can also mean lechate, which means to mitaher, to cleanse. It says here, Uvechete yechamatni imi. My mother conceived me in iniquity. My mashma dahai chete. How do you know the word cheteh is a lashon of tahor, a lashon of something positive, dichtiv? Because it says in Vayikra, when it comes to tzarat abayit, v'chiteh et abayit. When it comes to being meteher the bayit from tzarat, it says v'chiteh et abayit. Umitargamina, an unclus there, translates it, v'yidke yat beita, that you will be meteher, you will cleanse the house. V'bayitayim ha'ocha, they prove it from here. From Mitilim, it says, tichat eini be'ezov et har, that you should purge me with the Azov, and I will be pure. So here you see the word, or the Shorish, Chet, is used to mean Tahor. And therefore when David says, in Tehillim, Uvechete yechematni imi, my mother conceived me, Pashtut ha-pazuga is in iniquity, but it could also be read, Uvechete in purity, and through Tehara. And that's what it means, close to the time of the mikveh, that's when conception happens. Avamar Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Kevin Sheba Zachar Baolam, Bashalom Leolam. When a male child is born in the world, peace comes to the world. Shenamar, because it says in Yishayo, Shilchu Kar Mushel Eretz, send a lamb to the ruler of the land. A lamb over there meaning a gift to the ruler of the land. Zachar, we say now that no trikunun, that Zachar is an acronym for Zekar. This is a gift. So the Zachar is born, it's like a gift. Vamar Rabbi Shmuel, Debe Rabbi Ami, they say, Bazachar Bolam, Ba Kikaro Bido. And when a male comes to the world, Zachar Zekar.
He comes with his provisions in hand.
Because it says, Ba Elisha tells the Melech to put out a meal for them. It says, Vayichrelahem Kirag Dola, that he prepared for them a great feast. So you see that the word kar indicates feast, gift, or something positive. And therefore, Zekar means that this is a gift. As opposed to that, Nikeva, Enema Klum. When Nikeva comes out, that's no gift. Nikeva is a notrikun, is an acronym for Nikia Ba'a. Comes out clean, without anything. Adamra Mizoni Lo Yivila. Until she says, feed me or take care of me, nobody gives anything to her. Dichtiv, Nakva, Scharcha, Alai, Ve'etena. This is the Yaakov and Lavan. Lavan says to Yaakov, Nakva, Scharcha, Alai, set your price and I will give it. So the Gemara is darshaning Nakva to mean Nikeva. That a nikeva needs to speak up before anybody brings the food or the gifts. Shalom Tami David Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Mipnei Ma'amrat Torah Yoledet Mevi'ah Korban. One of the very, very famous Gemaras in Shas. Why does the Torah say that a Yoledet has to bring a Korban Chatat? Amar Lahen B'Shasha Korat Leleid. When a woman is birthing and the baby is emerging, Kofetzet from the pain goes and she finishes Bat. She takes a shua shelo tizakek lebala, that she will not be together with her husband again. She will not become impregnated again because this is so painful and so dramatic. Fika chamra Torah tavi korban, and therefore the Torah says, bring a korban chatat to be mechaper on this shvua. Matgilav Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, what type of answer is that? Number one, vaha mezidahi. Number one, it was intentional. She took the shvua intentional. It wasn't an accidental type of shvua. It was a shvua that was intentional. And on that, you don't bring a korban chatat. And number two is, it has to do with the regret over here. You don't just bring the korban chatat. You only have the problem with the shvua once you regret taking the shvua. Karban shvua by you to ye. Even on top of that, why should you bring a korban chatat? She should be bringing a korban olev yored, which is the korban that you bring when you take a shvua that you don't keep. So Rav Yosef does not like that explanation. And we see other places in Shas that the chatat, for instance here, and the chatat by the Nazir, there is a machloket between the Tanaim as to what the nature of those korbanot are. Are they chataot because they come ala chait? And that's like similar to here, Rav Shimon bar Yochai and others by the case of Nazir. Or are these chataot a type of korban that is not necessarily associated with chait, with sin, but rather some sort of preparation or combination with the olah? And that's what you see here from Rav Yosef, who does not like the interpretation of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Umim b'nei ma'amra Torah zachar l'shivah nekevah l'arbarasar. Why does the Torah tell us that when a woman gives birth to a zachar, she's tmeah for 7 days? By nekevah, 14 days. Zachar shel kol smechim bo mitcharetet l'shivah. Because a male that everybody's happy, the fact that a male child was born, she has charata, she regrets having taken the shvuah, that she won't have more children, or she won't be together with her husband, because she sees all the happiness, all the excitement around her, and therefore she wants to get back to her, together with her husband much faster, and she has regret much faster. Nekeva shakol atzavim ba, a female that's born where there's not as much excitement around it, mitcharet ed arbasar, it takes her a little longer to be willing to get back together with her husband, it takes her 14 days. Uvnei mamra Torah mila l'shmona. Why is the Brit Milah on the 8th day? Shlo yeh kulam smichim, vaviv v'imo atzavim. So it shouldn't be that everybody that comes to the Brit Milah is excited, and the parents are upset because they're not able to be together. So therefore, only on the 8th day, after the 7 days of Tumah, when the husband and wife are allowed to be together again, only then do we have the Brit Milah. Tanya, Rabbi Meir, Omer mipnei amara Torah nida l'shiva. So this we discussed when we did our introduction to Masechet Nida. This is one of the reasons brought forward the mitzvah of Nida, which is, why does the Torah say that a woman should be tmeah for 7 days every time that she has a sighting of dam when she has her menstrual cycle? Kedei shetei chaviv al bala kishat knisata l'chupa, to engender in the husband a love for her like the moment that he married her. By taking her away or making her asur for a certain period of time, that engenders a certain amount of excitement and longing for the woman like it was when they first got together. Shul talmid David Rabbi Dostai Rabbi Nai mipnei ma'ish mechazer al isha. Why does a man chase after the woman in order to get married? But women don't chase after the men. I mean, why is it the derech of a man to look for a wife and not that the woman is looking for the husband? Mashallah Adam Shavado Aveda. He says, I'll give you a parable. Somebody loses something. Mi chazer al mi. Who looks for whom? Bal Aveda machzer al Aveda to. The lost object doesn't look for the owner of the object. The owner looks for the lost object. So too over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam. Chava was created from the bone that was taken out of Adam. Adam lost that bone and it was created into the Isha. So he's looking for the Aveda. That lost bone is what he's trying to recover. So therefore the owner is trying to recover his Aveda. And that's why the man goes out to search for the female and not the other way around. Umipnei ma ish panav lamata visha panim lamala klape ish. Why is it when a man and woman cohabitate, the man is facing down and the woman is facing up towards the man? The man faces to the ground which he was created from the afar, and the woman faces up to the man from whom she was created. Why are men more easily appeased and calmed than women? Zem imakom shnivra, vezum imakom shnivret. Man which is made from afar, from something that is soft and pliable, is also more soft and pliable. A woman who is made from a bone, an etzem, which is hard, she is less pliable and less open to appeasement. Mipnei ma'isha kola arev, venish kolo arev. Why is it that the woman's voice is pleasant and beautiful, and that's not true of the man's voice? Zem imakom shnivra, vezum imakom shnivret. each one of them for the place that they were created. If you hit the bone, it makes noise. It can be used for a drum or for flute. Therefore, she was made from a bone that has a musical side to it, so therefore her voice is more appealing. The man was made from a fire which has no sound to it, there his voice is less appealing. Shenemar ki kolech arev umarech nava. Because your voice and your looks are beautiful. And over here, the Shir HaShirim, only the man praises the woman's voice, but we don't see a similar refrain in the woman's longing for the man, that she doesn't praise the man's voice. So we see here that the woman's voice is something unique and unusual. Okay, we'll stop here at the end of the parak, and we'll continue with the new parak tomorrow.